Hello, and welcome to COJ Roleplay. I am Eric, and I will be your keeper of arcane lore as we play Call of Cthulhu. And with me tonight is Steve.
Hi, my name is Steve LeBreton, and I am playing Dorian Dunn, a Irish bare-knuckle boxer.
Goose.
Hi, everyone. I'm Goose. I am playing Harold Sullivan, a parapsychologist.
Kate.
Hi there. I'm playing Dottie, a freelance journalist.
Graham.
Evening, all. I'm Graham. I'm playing Conrad Klein, university lecturer, psychologist, and relationship counselor.
Mark.
I'm Mark, and I've got Donald Kennedy, a World War I fighter pilot.
Very good. As I said, tonight we are playing Call of Cthulhu. So turn down your lights and get yourself all ready for Eldritch Horror. So where we left off our investigators in our last episode, they had all gotten together in a diner and met Mr. Knott, a real estate owner who had a problem with one of his houses. It seemed that there is an unsavory reputation, and he would like these investigators to clear that reputation right up for him so he can rent that property out. Found out that two of our investigators, Dr. Klein and Dottie, both had connections with the previous tenants, and the whole investigative group went to go to Roxbury Sanitarium, where both of the two adults of the family that lived there are currently admitted. After that, they went to actually look at the house and the neighborhood, went into a few of the rooms in the house, and Dorian Dunn spoke with the cigar and newspaper vendor across the street and down the road a little bit to get a little bit of word of what's going on with the house in the neighborhood. With all that, let's get back into the investigation, where our investigators are going for a spot of lunch, as it has been half a day's worth of investigating, and they're probably pretty hungry, so they're going to discuss where they're going to go next. As we continue with this episode of the classic Call of Cthulhu scenario, The Haunting. Now, how about lunch, everybody?
Dorian's always hungry.
Time for a sandwich. Go find a Monte Cristo.
An excellent sandwich. Or an excellent cigar, depends on your preference.
Oh, that I didn't know.
I'm a bigger fan of the Croque Madame.
Nice Reuben on rye.
Well, it sounds like you're all headed to a deli. So, that can be very much arranged. You get yourselves an assortment of sandwiches, some that have melted cheese on them, some maybe that don't. It does not really matter.
Perhaps a fried egg.
Perhaps a fried egg indeed.
The kraut.
I don't know. No krauts according to the World War I pilot. He's not a Reuben fan. So anyways, so you're sitting down and having a bite. Jimmy.
Sorry, go ahead.
Has a curious question for Mr. Sullivan. Mr. Sullivan, do you keep track of paranormal happenings around in the greater Boston area?
I do. I try to keep an account of everything I've investigated.
Interesting. Interesting. Did you hear anything about a haunting in the Sheaf Street neighborhoods?
Not offhand.
Because this sounds like the kind of thing that would have shown up in the newspapers.
Some people don't really understand the paranormal. Some people think it's hooky. Some people really won't investigate into it. Like our good doctor here thinks that the two patients could have been food poisoning.
I've seen crazy things than that.
Yeah, and who knows? It could actually have been food poisoning, but he seems to be stuck on a poison of some sort.
Well, I once saw a guy go two rounds with a grizzly bear, and that was pretty crazy stuff. And I thought I was on some kind of poison then.
Well, Mr. Kennedy, you have experience in the military, World War I. You more than any of us would know the stories, the unfortunate realities of the trench warfare and the exposure to mustard gas and other toxins that our soldiers encounter and the horrifying effects on the body and the mind. To suggest that such a thing is a far-fetched explanation for suffering being experienced by our unhappy couple is quite frankly short-sighted and unscientific.
Yeah, I've seen shell shock that looked like both those cases.
I think this is a very open and shut case. It isn't something related to contamination of food or anything ingested. Perhaps it's some sort of vapors coming up from the basement. Who knows?
So maybe we need to investigate the city plans about the sewers under the house.
There might not even be sewers. I don't know. 1923.
There probably are sewers, but city planning might not be up to what you might be imagining exists. There might be a list of the sewers. There might be some broad general maps, but it's 1920. There might not be a comprehensive map of the sewers.
You said it's December, right?
It's January.
Or it's January, and Prohibition hits, in January.
It does. It's right around the corner.
Okay.
We're just ahead of Prohibition.
But Prohibition's in a few weeks, so it's 1920, whatever it is.
It's 1920.
But it is 1920. Yeah, it passed it in 1919, right? So the Great War has ended recently. So if it's 1920, how old is the house?
That information you don't know.
Like, it's not a new build.
Nope, it's not a new build. This is pre-war. This is before the Great War. Jimmy pipes up and says, if you want to find the history, there might be news articles about it in the Central Library. Any odd occurrences, that's where they keep any records of it. And as I said before, there's the Clippins at the Boston Globe. They might have some killed articles over there. I don't know. If there was something that maybe the owner of the property did not want out into the public, or maybe there's people down at City Hall or other interested parties that don't want out known about a area where there's lots of businesses around, they might have killed an article.
That's why I think we should go to the city planner, find out the history of the place, maybe go to the Globe and see if they had a story, see if they can get a copy of the police report even of the night.
Dottie, it comes to mind that if you got to go there, you're going to have to deal with Artie. To reference those who know comic books, Artie's kind of a in between of J. Jonah Jameson and Mr. White from Superman. He's not as grumpy as J. Jonah Jameson, but he's not quite as congenial as Perry White. He's a guy who probably smokes and drinks. He probably smokes a lot and drinks a lot of coffee and lives off of pastries and has the stress of trying to get a paper out on a regular basis. He's not completely unreasonable, but you might be able to convince him to let you see the killed stories.
I can be persuasive.
All right, I think we've got our next destination.
If need be, I'm quite good at asking people to do things and them letting me do them.
Right on. Okay, well, I guess if you guys want to head there first, absolutely. Or splitsies, or...
It's up to you how you want to handle things. Do you want to split the investigating party?
Not when you ask me like that.
I would ask that no matter what situation you were in. If you guys were going to lunch and you wanted to go to separate places, I'd ask just the same way.
As long as you can get a croque madame at the deli.
All right. So everyone finishes up their sandwich, soup, beverage of choice. You guys hail a cab and you're going to the Boston Globe?
Yeah.
Okay. You head over to the Boston Globe. Go in the front door. It is a private business, but it is open to people to walk in. People do submit want ads and whatnot. There's even, letters to the editor and whatnot. So you walk in. Dottie, you recognize Sandy Gillis sitting behind the front desk. Hey, Dottie, how's it going?
Hey, Sandy. Same old. I don't know how to talk like a 1920s person.
It's okay. You don't have to.
Okay. I cordially greet her. It's happy to see her again and ask her if I can just get in to see some old articles.
Hold on, because you want to go to we don't keep old editions here. Those are in the Central Library. But do you mean like the morgue?
The morgue.
Hey, well, I think you got to talk to Artie about that. I can't just let you know the morgue. It's, like, who are these people who are with you? You're a freelancer. I mean, maybe, but with these people, you're definitely gonna have to talk to Artie about that.
Okay, well then, ask to see Artie.
Okay, he's in his office. He hasn't been yelling at anyone for at least the last hour. So maybe you'll be the first. So go for it. He just had lunch, so he might be pretty amenable.
All right. Well, then, I go in and happy to greet him.
Are you all going in?
Oh.
Or is it just you, Dottie?
Maybe I should go in.
I think it would be wise for her to go in by herself.
Yeah.
Instead of four of the strange guys with her.
Okay.
Yeah.
We can make that happen. So you open the door. He looks up. Where's my article? You gotta have something for Donnie. Donnie, I haven't seen anything from you, but 3 days. Come on. Where's my article?
I'm working on it. I need to get into the morgue to see some old articles.
Donnie, you're not a full-timer here. You're not going to just go snooping around in the killed articles in order to create a new story, are you? It's not the first time I've heard something like that happen.
Do you want an article or do you want an article?
Oh, what's the article you're working on? What are you working on? Give me something here. Like, why are you going into the clippings? Like, this is the stuff we killed.
I guess I'll tell them that it's about a house and about a couple that went insane.
He's kind of thinking. You know, this might be ticking in his head. Did he hear something about that? He's like, couple went insane. I don't know. Well, why do you need to go on the clippings then? It seems like he got a story right there. Couple went insane.
I want the history of the house because it's word on the street that it's that it's haunted.
All right, make a persuasion roll. See how it goes.
Okay. I got a 9 on a 70.
It's like a 79?
No, like, because this is just my 100 dice.
Oh, I can't see your 100. So it's a 97?
No, it's just a 9.
It's a 9.
Oh, a 9. A 9.
Yeah.
Like, well, you know, I guess that's pretty reasonable. So you're just going to go down to yourself?
I have a couple friends with me, but I can go down solo, you know.
Well, who are these friends you got going with you? I mean...
Well, we have a paranormal investigator.
Really? I mean, you keep your own company and whatnot, but...
Hey, need an extra set of eyes.
Eyes are eyes, I guess, you know. Is this a paranormal investigator and you?
No, there's three others.
Three? You want to bring four strange men into the morgue?
So we can keep it speedy.
All right, fair enough. All right,
Ruth has some sick fetish.
Go see Ruth. She's got the key to the morgue. She'll let you in there. She'll tell you how to find everything.
Beauty.
All right. But I want my article. Give me my article.
I'll give you your article.
Damn right.
Thanks, Artie.
I'm too good to you. That's about as sexist as I'm going to get with the characters.
That's okay.
Oh, you're not in your...
I know I'm not, but this is...
You missed 100 years ago.
This is for public consumption. So you head over to Ruth's desk, and it's right by a door that's just like a flat door into a wall. Dottie, good to see you. What do you need?
Just need down into the morgue. Artie gave the okay.
Artie! Yeah, she can get in there. Don't worry about it. So she goes over, unlocks the door to the morgue, and opens the door, says, all right, it's sorted by name and address, for the most part, when it comes to places. So, I've looked down. And because you talked your way in, there is no need to make you guys roll to search for it. You can find it because it is well organized.
Okay.
And because, Dottie, you did such a good job of talking your way in there, you get the handout. Which means you get to read it.
You get to read it.
Okay. So there is now a handout in your inbox.
Oh, okay.
It's like all official and stuff, eh?
It's all official and stuff.
Track through all RPG. Right.
Okay. So, Boston House of Horror. You've probably come across an eerie house that looks like it belongs in a horror story, but you might not have ever... I have to read this whole thing?
Yep.
Oh, Jesus. Okay.
Otherwise, the people listening won't know what you've seen.
Fair. Okay. So, but you might not have ever heard of the most haunted house in Boston. The Sheaf Street Mansion, located in Copse Hill, Boston, is one of the most haunted houses in the city. Since its construction, multiple owners have suffered bizarre misfortunes ranging from mental illness to death under unusual circumstances. The house was built in the early 1800s by a merchant of some means. In 1835, he fell victim to a strange disease and sold the house to a W. Corbett. Mr. Corbett, who had several court battles with his neighbors and was thought to be both odd and eccentric, lived in the house until his passing in 1866. In 1880, a family of French immigrants moved into the house, a father, mother, and their three children, a boy and two girls. in an unfortunate series of events that took place over the course of only a few weeks in November and December of 1880, the mother and father were killed in separate incidents. On November 18th, 1880, Adrien Lucier was killed when a staircase collapsed as he was walking down to the basement. His son, Adrien Jr., was present during the incident and reported seeing a mysterious black shape in the corner of his eye. In December of the same year, Mary Lucier was found dead and their three children crippled after they were crushed by an unknown object in one of the upstairs bedrooms. After the two accidents, neighbors and police suspected that foul play was involved. The children, however, said that the family had been experiencing unusual phenomena for some time prior to the accidents. Strange noises and a feeling of unearthly presence emanating from their basement. Their concerns were not taken seriously by their neighbors or by the police. Following the tragedy of the Lucier family, the house stood vacant until 1909 when another family moved in. The new family fell ill almost immediately after moving into the house. Each member of the family showed different symptoms. As the months passed, their illnesses became increasingly severe. The first to fall ill was the husband and father. Doctors could not offer them a diagnosis for the conditions, which appeared to go beyond the realm of human understanding. Finally, in October 1914, the oldest son was found raving mad in his room, with a self-inflicted wound from a large knife. He died shortly after from his injuries. His parents and siblings were so heartbroken by his death that they moved out immediately and never returned. The house stood vacant again until 1918 when the Macarios rented it. The family seemed happy at first. However, the neighbors soon reported hearing bizarre noises and seeing strange behavior that compelled them to call the police. Within a month after moving in, the parents were admitted to the Roxbury Sanitarium. The children were sent to live with relatives. Neighbors reported that Mr. Macario was in a constant state of terror and that he believed that something sinister was happening in his home. The house at large remains a mystery. Although rumors have spread throughout the neighborhood, some implicating natural causes and others attributing to strange events in the supernatural, Mr. Knott, the landlord, has refuted them all. The claim said that the most so-called occurrences are neighborhood gossip with no basis in reality, and the house will be refurbished and rented out again soon. He said that several factors have contributed to his difficulty in finding a renter, citing repairs that need to be made and the recession more generally as probable reasons why renters have been reluctant to move into the old house. And there's a couple notes jotted down here, one saying, please note, both City Hall and Mr. Knott have contacted the Globe with concerns about this article and that they feel it is speculative and could not create misconceptions about the area. That was Edgar Hayes at the front desk, and there's one further down saying, October 19th, editorial desk review. Sam, unfortunately, after serious consideration and discussion in regards to the financial implications for the landlord and the City Hall's worries about how this story will affect the development in an already struggling neighborhood, we are unable to publish your article at this time.
There you have it. You have a killed article from the Boston Globe.
Well, it seems pretty obvious what's happened, and I will admit my error. There's not seem to be anything in the wine, anything in cigarettes. So, Harold, I congratulate you on your insight. Clearly, it's some fumes or vapors coming from the basement.
Hey, on the plus side, we got a couple free bottles of wine there.
Well, perhaps we do. But clearly, it's fumes coming from the basement. Every family that has moved into that place has been affected the exact same way. They need to hire a contractor and do some renovations down there and perhaps concrete the floor to prevent any fumes rising up from below. I think that Mr. Knott would be very pleased with this simple solution, and then we can get on with our lives.
I don't think it's something as easy as that, sir.
Well, it perhaps not, but it certainly seems to fit the facts.
I just wish we were able to get into the basement and do a proper investigation.
But what was really offending us? Just rickety stairs, right?
By any chance, did anybody notice if there was like a storm door or outside into the basement?
Mr. Sullivan, how about you make a luck roll for me? This is just to determine whether or not you looked to see if there was a storm door.
Nope, he didn't.
You didn't look. None of you did. Sorry. All right. Well, there might be more information at the Central Library about occurrences that happened at this house or at this residence.
By any chance, with the killed article, is there pictures of the house that would have been printed for the paper?
With the article we have, there are no pictures of the house.
Yeah.
But it is the same house. It is the house on Sheep Street.
Yeah, address matches and everything, yeah.
Yeah.
No, I was just hoping that if there was pictures, maybe that we could see the cellar door, if there was a set of cellar doors.
Unfortunately, no. There is no photo with...
Well, Conrad took a look, like, leaned down and took a look around down in the basement.
You saw no light emanating from outside.
Oh, okay. So no window. Well, I mean, if there's a door, it would be shut, but...
You did not notice... Yeah, you did not notice a door or a window down there. Nope.
Well, what's preventing us from going down the stairs? Is it just rickety?
Yeah, it's not in good shape, but, I mean, there's...
Let's get a ladder.
But Jimmy stops you and says, whoa, this is only the first day of an investigation. We're being paid by the day. This is a job, and a thorough job needs to be done. When we sign off that this house is clean and fit for people to live in it, we better be right about that. And if we got a cause, we better investigate it fully.
Now,
I mean, I don't know about you, but, I mean, there's an owner about this house, and we don't know anything about him. The first actual guy who really owned the house, that Corbett guy. We don't know anything about him. Maybe there's something about him. Maybe there's something about these the French family. The Luciers.
Yeah.
Or the original builder. And then, that's not actually noted in the article, but maybe there's something about the original builder. I don't know, maybe he was into some hooky-dooky stuff. I don't know.
Well, sir, you are a professional private investigator, so I...
That's right, I am.
Perhaps it's best to follow your lead in these matters.
I follow the clue, follow the places where we can find clues. If we find nothing that leads us anywhere else, then sure, let's go check out the... Let's do a top-to-bottom search of that house. But, you know, let's give ourselves a chance to make a few bucks while we're at it. Mr. Knott has generously offered an excellent pay for the work that we're doing.
So, if we were to look into the families that previously owned the house or previously been in the house, would that be city record or would that be the library?
If you want to look to see if any additional articles about the house were written, that's the Central Library. That would be stuff that was actually published. Yeah. You might be able to find some more information about goings on at the house that could have been published in the newspaper.
I'm more looking on the family themselves.
City doesn't really keep records of families living in houses too much. I mean, they might keep note of who owns the house at any given time. But the article kind of told you who owned the house when. But the city records aren't going to go beyond, like, deed transfers and stuff like that.
The library should have old censuses, so we should go to the library.
I know a thing or two about libraries.
If you know some things about the library.
Dorian wouldn't know this. But the city records would have information about what the property was before the house was built.
Yeah, and that's what Harold's been trying to get a hold of at the beginning of this investigation.
Probably a swamp releasing foul vapors into the basement.
And being as it's Boston, you're probably right.
Before we take off out of the morgue, can we look for articles on these families that might have been dead?
If you're looking by the name, you can look up for the names of those families, the Luciers, Corbett, and there was another family in there too, wasn't there?
I think there was three. I can't remember.
I'm scanning for it, but I can't see it. Like, I'm not.
Yeah, they talk about another family, but it doesn't give names. You can search for Lucier and Corbett in the clippings, but remember, these are that would be unpublished articles. You take some time and you look under the names and where you would find Corbett or Lucier. There's nothing there, really. No unpublished articles were produced for them. But the records of the... let me see, because I do have a PDF that tells me how far back the records go.
I'm more looking to find out when the whole "this is a haunted house" story started. Did it start with Gabriella did it start back?
Based on what you've seen in that one article that Dottie found, it started with the story seemed to have started with the Luciers, from what you've been able to tell.
Yeah, besides that, it was just saying that Mr. Corbett had, like, several court battles with his neighbors, so, like, not a very well-liked guy, both odd and eccentric, and he lived there for about 30, 31 years?
35, I think it's...
Oh, wait, never mind. Yeah, it just said, sorry. Yeah, you're right.
The clippings only go back far as 1878. They don't go back any further than that.
Okay.
Dorian is going to look around the morgue and see if he can't find anything on Mr. Knott that might have been hushed, just in case we're looking into a thing that he might be setting this up as some kind of scheme.
You don't see anything that would indicate that something like that. You don't find any articles about Mr. Knott. Just this mention of him written into, like, he's barely mentioned in this article. The notations on it say that he has requested that this story be killed, that not be published.
Okay.
Do we know how long Mr. Knott has owned the place?
He didn't say, but it would be after the, I believe it was 1909, wasn't it?
What did the article say? It said it was...
Another family moved in 1909, and their son killed himself in 1914. And it said vacant until 1918. Now, he probably bought it somewhere between 1914 and 1918.
1918, yeah.
So he bought it somewhere in there, and his first tenants were the Macarios, as far as this article indicates, anyway. It's entirely possible that this guy bought this house on the cheap, thinking it would be a great rental property.
Entirely possible.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't know, because he hasn't said.
All right, well, I think it's to the library now?
Okay, to the library, if everyone's in agreement.
I think that was our destination.
Okay.
I like libraries.
All right. You leave the morgue. You thank, I assume you thank Ruth on the way out. Maybe you don't. I don't know. Maybe you're jerks.
It's the 20s. We're all gentlemen. Even the Irish guy.
And you head out. It looks like it's picked up. It's like a little slushy weather happening. But, you know. You get in a cab and off you go. And you pull up to the central library. You walk in, and there is an old woman at the front desk. Oh, hello there. Can I be of any help to you? Do you need anything here in the central library? Are you looking for something?
City records?
City records. They might have some. I got all sorts of books. A lot of city records would probably be with City Hall, but we might have some old records. You never know.
Could you show us where those is?
Of course. Anything else you're looking for? Just city records?
At the moment, yes.
So this is like the public library of Boston?
Yeah, this is the public library of Boston. Because you're going to be, I'm going to say this right now. If you start making a library use check now, this is half a day. So if you want to look for a bunch of things, this is when you make your rolls now. Otherwise, you're coming back tomorrow to look at more stuff. Okay? So before we make rolls, you're looking for city records. You're looking for, like, property records.
Yeah.
Is anybody else looking for anything else?
Yes.
What are you looking for?
Conrad is going to go to the natural sciences section of the library and look for information on swamp gas.
Swamp gas. Okay. All right. That might be available.
Just organic chemistry, you know, what sort of off-gassing can be found in swampy areas, you know, chemical reactions happening underground, producing fumes, things of that nature.
Okay. Mr. Kennedy, are you looking for anything?
Yeah. I mean, I still think it's somebody doing this on purpose because they want something from the property. So I want to see about land surveys, that sort of thing for the area. Yeah, maybe there are, you know, minerals in the ground that people want. I'm trying to find motivation.
Are we going to Scooby-Doo this thing?
Ms. Dottie, are you looking for anything in particular?
I guess I'd like to try and maybe look up a little bit more about the families that had previously lived there.
Sure. Mr. Dunn believes in supernatural. Are you looking for anything in particular?
Mr. Dunn is, mind you, the version of the supernatural that he believes in is very biblical.
Right. Yeah, no, I get you.
But, so the article that we got from the newspaper mentioned that the person that lived in the house before any of the problems started was Corbett, correct?
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
So Mr. Dunn is going to be looking for any information he can find on the Corbett family.
Okay.
And I don't anticipate great success.
Okay. We're doing this as group roles, so the successes we're looking for will yield information. If one of you has tapped into a correct lead source, I can get you information for that. So, do you just want the librarian to point you in the right direction, or do you want some more in-depth help?
I'd like direction on where the records would be on them.
So if that's how everyone is going about it, I would like you all to make a library use check.
How old is she?
She's probably in her 70s. She can move around. She's old, but I mean, you know, old by
no, 19, no, 26. No. Like if I tapped her for specific information, like, do you know of this house?
You can ask her if you really want to.
While I'm looking, I'm asking her as well.
Well, dear, I was born in New York City, and I came here, and oh, what was it? It was 1885. I used to work at a library in New York, you see, and then I moved myself over here when I got a transfer to the Boston Public Library, a much bigger library, you see. It's quite a step up for me. And so I've been working here ever since. I don't really get to Sheep Street very much. No, I don't know anything about that house. Right. I'd give you a nice little ramble there.
It was perfect. I rolled a 9 on my library use.
Okay. Tell me what kind of success you got.
It's under my 5th.
It's under your 5th, so that's an extreme. Rolls from everyone, yeah. Please.
I got an 11, which is 11. Extreme success.
Extreme success.
I got 95 out of my 20.
That is almost a critical failure, but not quite.
Yeah.
I got 53. I'm looking at comic books.
Awesome.
I got 12, so that's under my smallest number. Sorry, I have to zoom
that's
in really far.
Extreme success.
That one.
Okay, so you got 3 extreme successes. That's very, very good. So the librarian points you out in directions of where to find information. And fortunately, even though a couple of you are looking at comics and finding books about nonfiction adventure stories surrounding pilots.
Tarzan stories.
Exactly. Mr. Klein, you do find some information about swamp gas.
Excellent.
It is somewhat informative. It will probably take you a day or so of study in order to really get acquainted with the effects of swamp gas.
But my plan is I just want to familiarize myself enough with the topic to be able to have a conversation. I think the smartest thing to do would be to go back in the house tomorrow, so Mr. Durant is not too upset about his fees. And if we bring a shovel and a couple of buckets, we can take some soil samples from the basement. And then I have some colleagues on campus at Boston University in the chemistry department who I can ask a favor, see if they can analyze the soil samples and see if there's any residue of any dangerous toxins or other organic chemistry.
Yeah, okay.
So I just need to arm myself with enough information to be able to have that discussion. I don't need to research it thoroughly. Someone else has already done that.
Mr. Kennedy, your search doesn't really come up with much information. Same with yours, Mr. Sullivan. There's not a whole lot of information on that particularly. However, Dottie, while thinking about what Mr. Dunn had talked about, kept an eye out for information about Corbett, in which came up 3 articles. So because it was his idea
again
to start with, Mr. Dunn, I have dropped the first article to you.
Shit, fuck.
And I don't want to leave out Mr. Kennedy. So I'm dropping the second article to you. And because it's been a while since we heard Graham read.
Sure. Did you read about swamp gas?
I've dropped the third one to you, Dr. Klein. So starting with the first article, please. I would have made it Dottie, but she just read that whole giant article.
Like, it just kept going.
I know. They're really good handouts.
They're really well done.
This is really
well
done.
It feels like grade 4 again and like reading in class.
$2 on drive-through RPG.
They even colored it and stained it to look like old newspaper. It's impressive.
I know.
Okay, Boston merchant selling property in Copp's Hill. Failing health behind move. Boston, May 14th, 1835. Following a long illness, local merchant Hans-Jürgen Schmidt has sold his recently completed Copse Hill property to one Walter Corbett, who has requested the utmost discretion in this matter. The house, which is situated on Sheaf Street in Boston, was completed only 2 months ago, but Schmidt was forced to sell it due to his ailment. Schmidt has taken up residence with his brother-in-law in nearby Arkham. He is reported to be suffering from a combination of mania and fever brought on by an ailment which has yet to be diagnosed. Sheaf Street residents report that Corbett has been purchasing various crates and barrels from local merchants for the past week. It is believed that this is related to some kind of business venture. However, details remain unknown at this time.
All right. Thank you. Article 2.
A legal battle over a residence in Copse Hills takes shape. Boston, Massachusetts, March 1852. A legal battle between Walter Corbett and his neighbors has erupted over the possession of his house in Copse Hill. Mr. Corbett, who has lived in his home for 15 years, is being sued by his neighbors for reasons which are unclear. Mr. Corbett's neighbors have called his serious habits and inauspicious demeanor a detriment to the neighborhood atmosphere. They have cited this as a reason for their petition to evict him from his home. The details of the lawsuit are unknown as court records are not public record, but it is likely that the petition will show up soon in the public record at City Hall once it's filed by the plaintiffs. The case will be heard in Massachusetts Superior Court by Judge Charles Hemingway as Associate Justice of the Supreme Judicial Council of Massachusetts since 1841.
You suspect that perhaps the editing of the newspapers is not entirely great. Perhaps Artie is not getting, well, Artie's predecessor did not get enough sleep.
I mean, it was 70 years ago.
That is true. All right, and Article 5.
All right, so this is an obituary. There are two obituaries. One is for a John T. Ropes, which I'll read them both. John T. Ropes died at 9 o'clock last night. The patient had a sharp attack of pneumonia, which resulted in his death. He died as he had lived, without fear and without reproach, leaving no regrets with his family or friends. His remains will be taken to Providence tomorrow. Ropes was born in Providence, Rhode Island, June 1, 1816. He graduated at Brown University in 1837, then studied law and was admitted to the bar in 1840. He began practice in Boston, became leader of the young men of that city who favored the anti-slavery movement. Legal knowledge, eloquence, and zeal made him conspicuous among the leaders of the Republican Party from its organization until his death. He served one term in Congress, 1859, and was a member of the Constitutional Convention of Massachusetts that revised the Constitution under which that state now operates and was for many years president of the National Republican Club. Next obituary, Walter Corbett, a local man who had been suffering from a long and painful illness. Passed away at his home in Copse Hill last week. Details of the exact cause of his death are not known at this time. A long-standing feud with neighbors had been an unfortunate reality of Mr. Corbett's life. His last will and testament requested that he be buried in the basement of the home where he lived for 40 years, a request that was met with strong oppositions and a new lawsuit by neighbors. Okay, a couple of things. All the buildings around the house on Sheaf Street are commercial, correct?
They are now, but remember, this was some time ago.
Okay. So the neighborhood is being reverse gentrified. So all these businesses are creeping in and crowding out residents. And this makes me even more certain that there is some sort of invisible gas or poison leaching out of the ground into the air of the house. This poor man requested that he be buried in the very basement that was poisoning him and likely caused his untimely death.
Not outside of possibility. You note that because you had three extreme successes searching for information, there is no article that details the outcome of this lawsuit.
Well, that's what I was thinking. So there was all this legal drama around this guy. But what was read earlier said that court records are not in the public domain. Which is odd. We'll go with it.
For private proceedings at that time, no, they're not.
Okay.
Perhaps a law in the future will make it such that they do become public domain, but at the moment, they are private domain until things are official.
All these lawsuits flying around, we don't know what about or what the results were.
Mm-hmm.
All the civil litigation.
Jimmy pipes in and he says, well, you know, information on civil court proceedings could be found at the Hall of Records, perhaps. Or at least some information about what happened with this last lawsuit. That might be at the Hall of Records.
He died in 1866, Mr. Corbett. And then there was likely a lawsuit filed in 1866 trying to sue to prevent him from being buried in the basement.
Yes. The neighbors probably didn't like the idea of a corpse being buried in their neighborhood. A lot of superstitious people back,
yes. back then. Yes. Witch burnings, the Salem trials.
We're a bit further out from that, but yes.
Truly a dark time. Some people's enlightenment. Some people refuse to accept enlightened scientific discourse.
But you have no information about whether or not that actually ever took place or not, since there was a lawsuit about it. But it is getting later. It did take time to find all this information. So it is getting towards the late afternoon to early evening. You went from about 1 o'clock to about 5 o'clock.
Yeah, so do we want to call it for the day and reconvene in the morning?
I think so.
Okay. So Jimmy recommends that you all meet at a diner again, get some coffee into you before starting the day.
Bacon and eggs.
Yeah, get some breakfast, get some coffee into you.
Eggs Benedict and they'll be using real hollandaise sauce back then. They won't be using instant stuff.
Instant? I didn't realize people could make instant hollandaise.
There is powder.
No. Not me, Jimmy.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, I will say, just because they're doing real hollandaise doesn't mean it's good hollandaise.
I'm putting some cigarette ash in that hollandaise.
Yeah.
Because they did smoke in the kitchen back then.
Oh, yeah.
Smoked everywhere back then.
Yeah. The librarian was having a smoke when he came in the front door.
Yeah, okay. We can meet up in the morning then.
So you all go home, have some dinner, and a good night's sleep. You meet up again first thing in the morning. Let you decide if there's something special about the diner you're in. But you meet up at the diner, get some breakfast, some coffee. It's time to start planning out what your next step's going to be.
I think we've pretty much decided that the Hall of Records is going to be our next stop for information.
Okay. Yeah,
so I would assume that we would hit up a diner somewhere in that location, like close to.
We need to know the outcome of the lawsuits.
All right. So you have some breakfast. Everyone has their meal of choice. Jimmy's having a nice greasy omelet with a cup of coffee. As you get finished that, it's time to hail a cab. Seems the weather's cleared up a bit. It's no longer slushy out. It's not gotten too cold. There's a little bit of melt that's happened, and it's cleaned up a little bit. It's not too bad. Okay. You drive down to Hall of Records. As you go in through the front door, there is another clerk. That's about a early 30s gentleman sitting behind the desk. Hello. Welcome to the Hall of Records. What can I do for you?
We're looking for records of 20 Sheep?
Sheep Street. 20 Sheep Street. Well, sure. I mean, come on back here, and you can take a look through the records. Have a look, see what you can find. And okay. This is another library use. So yeah. I'll need some library use checks out of you fine folks.
Okay.
Starting with the clear brains of the group, Mr. Dunn.
I got a 2.
Extreme success.
Extreme success.
I'm assuming that is extreme success for you.
Well, my, 20, yeah.
Yep, that's pretty good.
It's under 5, so, yep.
That's your, yeah. Okay, excellent, extreme success. Mr. Kennedy.
I got a 69 out of my 20.
Excellent.
Well, you're off by about a row or two from where you need to be, but that's okay. Mr. Klein, since you're so eager.
Regular success,
okay. Dottie, what do you got for me?
A medium success?
Just a regular success?
Yeah, that one.
Regular success? Okay, yep. And Mr. Sullivan?
A regular success.
Regular success. Okay, so we got 3 regulars and an extreme success. That's pretty good. Especially for the boxer. You know what that means, don't you, Steve?
The boxer's smart.
You get to read the next thing.
You get to read again. Oh, boy. Okay. So, let's see here. I will drop this to Goose to start with, since he hasn't read.
That's because Goose doesn't like to read.
That's fine. Oh, I will drop this to Steve. I will drop this to Kate. I'll drop this to Graham.
Okay,
so starting with Mr. Sullivan.
What the hell is... I can't read the calligraphy on this one. Holy shit! These letters. Is that what that is? These letters? Okay. Massachusetts, United States District Court of... I can't read the rest of the Bostonian symbol.
The letters granted pursuant to a decree entered by the court authorized and empower the above-named executor of will to perform all acts requisite to the proper administration and disposition of the estate or trust of the decree. Wait a minute. Do I have the right one open?
No, no, you're reading what I'm reading, but I was trying to read the symbol to signify what it was.
Oh, okay. Yeah, part of that's in Latin, man.
No. The United States District Court.
The United States District Court for the District of Massachusetts.
That's District of Massachusetts.
Oh, okay.
Okay, these letters granted, go ahead, Eric.
Pursuant
I can't read calligraphy.
Okay, granted pursuant to a decree entered by the court, authorize and empower the above-named executor of will to perform all acts requisite to the proper administration and disposition of the estate or trust of the decedent in accordance with the decree and the laws of Massachusetts, subject to the limitations and restrictions, if any, set forth above. This is the last will and testament of one Mr. Walter Corbett.
Oh.
And his date of death, November 20th, 1866. Domicile of the decedent is Suffolk, as in the county that he is from. And the executive of his will is Reverend Michael Thomas. It is notified on the day of November 21st, 1866. This is the decree that it be carried out.
Mm-hmm.
In testimony whereof, the seal of Suffolk County Civil Court has been affixed, and it is properly sealed. And
sorry, dude, couldn't read calligraphy.
Because it is so nice, I kind of want to show you all what it looks like. Because
yeah.
It is a really nice-looking document.
It is. It's really well done. I'm really impressed with the packet you found.
Oh, wow.
And it's harder to read because I expanded it out so you could see the whole thing. But I had it zoomed in to read.
Not bad.
It is.
Not bad.
Then we'll move on to Mr. Dunn.
I have not yet received the thing that you dropped to me.
Oh, you have not?
No.
I will try dropping it again then. Did it come through that time?
No, it's still the only thing I've got. That's the news article.
If you don't get it, I suppose I can do this one.
No, I want to try. The only thing I'm receiving is the news article that I got.
Okay, then I will. It is the last will and testament of Walter Corbett. Last will and testament, Boston, Massachusetts. I, Walter Corbett, make this my last will and testament in the presence of my Lord as witness to all men. I appoint Michael Thomas as executor of this, my last will and testament, who is to serve without bond on security being required. I give all my possessions to the Church of Contemplation, Boston, including my special book and my property on Chief Street. I will my own funeral to be performed by Reverend Michael Thomas of the Church Chapel of Contemplation, and I will that no relative or so-called friend be allowed to attend on any pretext whatsoever, but that they be prohibited by injunction from entering the chapel on seeing the body. I also direct that no notice whatsoever of my death shall be given by any relative or friend, and I forbid all letters of condolence and all floral trinkets. I wish my body to be interred in the basement of the property on Chief Street, as specified by the instructions left to my executor, Reverend Michael Thomas. All funds raised by leasing out my property on Chief Street are to be used to fund the church. On this day, the 20th day of July, 1865, Boston, Massachusetts, signed the signature of deceased Walter Corbett, signature of witness James Abbott, and signature of executor of will, Reverend Michael Thomas. And it has been sealed. And that brings us to Kate's optional handout.
I had no idea what I was looking at until you were reading out that will, because it's just a register of churches for Boston, Massachusetts, and the Reverend Michael Thomas is on there, and it's the status of the church is closed for a chapel of contemplation, and in the notes it says closed by police in 1912. But that seems to be like the only pertinent information I can really get from that.
Yep. And Graham.
Okay. Commonwealth of Massachusetts, Suffolk County, warrant of arrest. Sheriff or any police officer or constable of the said county. Whereas Boston PD Lieutenant Harold Pembroke of the said county has this day made complaint and information on oath before me, F.S. Wilmarth Major, a justice of the peace of said county, that Reverend Michael Thomas, in the same county, did on the 29th day of April, 1912, without legal justification and without apparent cause, Michael Thomas, with the help of accomplices in his church, kidnapped Godwin Marsh, Martin Regan, and Lindsay Blake, aged 8. Children have not been seen since their abduction, and there is concern that they may be in danger. Investigators suspect that the members of the Chapel of Contemplation are responsible for a series of child abductions. These are, therefore, to command you in the name of the Commonwealth to apprehend and bring before me, or some other justice of the said county, the body of said Reverend Michael Thomas and all members of the Chapel of Contemplation to answer the said complaint and to be further dealt with according to law. Given under my hand and seal this second day of May, 1912. Okay, so the first thing I notice, well, they're psychos. The second thing I notice is that Mr. Corbett died in 1866.
Yep.
That was 46 years before this warrant of arrest was issued.
Correct.
Reverend Michael Thomas is still around?
Would appear.
I'm just surprised you would expect a reverend to be... Well, I guess he could have been younger.
Yeah.
In his 30s after the seminary. Could be in his 70s. But this was 8 years ago and a mere 2 weeks after the Titanic sank.
But as you'll note in the records of the churches, this has been closed as of the 2nd of May, as of May 1912.
Well, this was, wasn't it June 1912 the church was closed, what you read, Kate?
Actually, no, it doesn't say. It just says 1912.
Okay. Well, it would have been after May of 1912 if the constabulary was on the hunt for these ne'er-do-wells.
So now you have another thread.
Well, I mean, the idea that Mr. Corbett's in a coffin under the floor, under the dirt in his basement is somewhat disturbing. And I guess we'd have to call the undertaker or the coroner. I'm not sure who would be dealing with this. But it makes me wonder, Mr. Knott, how much he knows. I'm wondering, I'm having some suspicions about this Mr. Knott, if that is his true name.
It is.
Ah, that's right. You are old comrades. Forgive me. Forgive my suspicion.
Mr. Kennedy, you would know, in fact, that Mr. Knott was wounded during the war and went back home with the idea of getting into real estate, thinking that it would possibly be a good time to start renting homes when people came back from the war.
Yeah, I think that church is the next place I want to look.
Yeah, I was going to say, where the Temple of Contemplation.
Chapel of Contemplation.
Chapel.
You don't have an address here, per se. You might be able to ask around to find out where it was, because it's clearly not open now. The clerk hears you talking about a police action against people. He looks over and says, hey, I know sometimes you can get records or reports from the police over at the higher courts, Central Police Station. If you know someone there, you might be able to get in. Not, you might be able to talk your way in to seeing some of the records. I don't know, some of it might be classified, you never know.
Because we're already here, would there not be a list of churches that have been in Boston?
Kate has a list of churches in Boston.
Okay.
It was a list of churches.
Oh, that's what it was? Okay.
So this Reverend Michael Thomas was the executor of Corbett's will.
Yeah. Correct.
But, I mean, that was a long time ago now, 46 years.
Reverend Michael Thomas was mentioned in all of the things that we found.
Yes. Maybe he's in jail.
Jimmy looks like he might very well be. I mean, does anyone know anyone at the higher courts? You guys can make a law check to find out if you do.
All right.
Now, I know none of you have the law skill because none of you are private investigators or police officers, but on the off chance that one of you rolls well enough, Maybe you do know somebody.
5% or under. 65.
Nope. Nope.
I do have some connections that could potentially know some people.
This is true.
So, if I were to make a, well, not necessarily a phone call.
You might. You do know people who have money, so they might actually have phones. Did you roll?
I haven't rolled yet.
Okay. Let's get rolls from everyone before we do that, okay?
Yeah. I figure that's the route that Dorian would go, is I know people, and they probably know people.
Dottie, what have you got?
I got a 5.
You got a 5?
Ooh.
I got a 5.
Yeah.
No, I'm not even kidding you. Wait, can you see that?
I can't, but I trust you.
It's a single digit.
I would That's never lie. I feel so guilty.
I trust you, Kate. Don't worry. Well, this actually works out rather well for you guys. Dottie, you know Kim DeBrun. She works as the clerk at the Higher Court Central Police Station. You've had to talk to her on occasion from previous criminal cases, and you guys have actually gotten along pretty well. So on a 5%, I did not actually think it would happen, but on a 5%, you know someone to talk to. This is what a library used, so this was a half day. So you guys are going to stop, get a quick bite. The boxer's probably really hungry because he's used to packing on a bunch of calories for what he does. You have a quick bite to eat, and then you head over to the higher courts. And you know right where to go, Dottie. So you you walk up to the clerk's desk, and Kim is there. So you are very lucky. Hey, Dottie, it's been a long time. You haven't done a criminal case in a while. What's happening? What? How you been? You seeing anybody?
Not right now, Kim. You know me. My job is my lover. Is that weird? I feel like that's weird and gross to say. But my work is my husband.
Married to my work.
There you go. That's
I tell you, young women these days are getting all sorts of strange ideas.
But I got these 4 gentlemen with me, so.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, quite a motley crew out there. Okay, well, what can I do for you?
We're looking for some records.
Oh, I got lots of records here, but records about what?
Chase Street and the chapel.
Chapel? What chapel?
Chapel of Contemplation.
Yeah. Oh, Chapel of Contemplation. That does ring a bell. That was a big to-do a few years ago. Here, let me take a look at what I can find for you. I'm not sure how much I can. I want you to just roll me a persuade.
Oh, I don't think that's good. Yeah, I got an 81 for 70, so I missed that.
Not quite as good.
No.
Can Dorian walk up and roll a charm? And try and flirt the information.
This would constitute a push, and pushes, if failed, have consequences. Like you getting kicked out on your ass because you've offended the front desk lady in the police station.
Just him or all of us?
I don't know. You push it too hard, and like at this point, you're not getting nothing. It just might mean you don't quite get everything.
Conrad looks very respectable. They won't kick him out.
You know what? Dorian's going to try it.
Okay.
I'm going to risk it.
Okay.
I got a 20.
What did you need?
35 is a regular success. So regular success.
Oh, look at you. Aren't you a big hunk of man?
Yes.
Give me a minute. I'll be right back. So,
won't hit on Kate because she's a woman, but hits on Steve like nobody's business.
Oh, honey. Big hunk of man over there. She's got a thing for big guys who look like they've been punched in the face a lot.
Scars, broken nose, cauliflower ear.
Okay. Kim has come back with a literal treasure trove of information for you. However, the police report she has about the church, Chapel of Contemplation, is heavily redacted. Now, who's the best reader? It's going to be the longest one of all.
It's redacted. It can't be that long.
I'll read it.
You want it?
Not Goose.
Okay. I'll drop that to Graham. I will drop this to Mark. I will drop this. Kate, and On, I will drop this to Goose.
Son of a bitch!
Okay, starting with Mr. Klein.
Okay, this is 4 pages, so buckle up.
Oh, damn.
It's heavily redacted. You can do the gist if you want. Like, you don't have to go do every single detail, but it's a police report.
Boston Police Department Special Branch Official Police Report, and it's stamped classified. Period George made, May 1912, incident raid on Boston cult. I testify that what you're about to read is an accurate account of the events that happened on the night of the raid of the Chapel of Contemplation. I participated in or witnessed all of the incidents recounted in this report and have tried to describe them as accurately as possible. After affidavits link members of the Chapel of Contemplation to the disappearance and assumed murder of several children in Boston's Copps Hill District, a task force from the Boston Police Department Special Branch was tasked with raiding the hideout of the alleged cult. At approximately 1:45 p.m. local time, Boston PD Special Branch was notified that a warrant had been issued for the arrest and prosecution of all members of the Chapel of Contemplation. A team of 8 Special Branch officers, myself included, was assembled to carry out the warrant and arrived at the chapel's location at 2:35. The rest of the team included officers, redacted, net, all veteran officers with proven records in the Special Branch. We arrived at the chapel to find a single-story brick building with a small sign out front that read Chapel Contemplation. There were no windows on the first floor, and the door appeared to be locked. Officer Redacted attempted to open the door, but it was jammed shut. We then used our battering ram to break down the door and enter the building. Once inside, we found ourselves in a small vestibule with another door directly in front of us. This one was also locked, so we used our ram again to break it down. As soon as we breached the second door, gunfire erupted from the inside of the main chapel, and Officers Redacted were hit. Officer Redacted took a bullet to the chest and died instantly. Redacted was hit in the arm, but managed to return fire, hitting one of the shooters before taking cover. The rest of us returned fire, and a total of 3 shooters were quickly neutralized. When the gunfire stopped, we made our way into the chapel to look for any other gunmen. Officer Redacted stayed behind in the vestibule to call for backup and medical help. The chapel itself was a large room with an altar at the far end and pews running down either side. It appeared to be empty at first, but as we fanned out to search, more gunfire erupted from the north side of the room, hitting and injuring Officer Redacted. That's the first page. The rest of us fired at anything that moved on that side, and eventually we killed 2 shooters. Officer Redacted retreated to the vestibule while the rest of us continued clearing the complex. In the back of the room, we found an office and several small rooms. Some of these rooms have been converted into makeshift holding cells. In the office, we found documents detailing the church's activities and organizational structure. Documents indicated that these cells were for prisoners who were to be sacrificed in order to allow a redacted into this world. They also detailed the existence of a vast network of underground tunnels beneath the facility. After searching the rest of the chapel, we found a secret door leading to a network of underground tunnels beneath the chapel. We descended into the darkness following a winding staircase until we came upon large metal doors inscribed with strange symbols. On the floor, we saw several bloody handprints. It appeared as though someone had been dragged through this door into whatever lay beyond. There was some difficulty with the door, but we managed to open it, and we advanced through a poorly lit hallway with our guns at the ready. The tunnels were dank and narrow, but we encountered no resistance as we made our way deeper into the underground complex. After a few minutes, we came to a large circular chamber. In its center stood an altar-like stone pedestal with 3 dead boys on it. Each of their arms was stretched out, forming the shape Y, and they lay facing each other so that together they formed a triangle. Around the pedestal was a bizarre map carved into stone. The patterns with their strange symbols seemed to represent stars and constellations from across the universe, as well as unknown celestial objects. I can't find a plausible explanation for what happened next. It was too chaotic to make sense of, but I'll try to reconstruct the events as accurately as I can. From the dark corridor, we watched at least 50 hooded figures circle the pedestal, chanting in a strange tongue. They seemed not to notice us. As the chanting grew louder, we realized we were witnessing some kind of a ritual. Suddenly, a redacted in the center of the altar. As we watched in horror, a terrifying redacted. It was unlike anything we'd ever seen before. A redacted. Utterly terrifying. With a redacted that snatched us from our stupor of disbelief, redacted action. Many cultists seemed unprepared for this turn of events and began to flee as Redacted emptied his Thompson. Redacted yelled that we all get out of there. The Thompson had seemingly no effect. Redacted bullets ripped redacted, but did not slow down this impossibly swift redacted upon the nearest cultists. As more and more cultists fled past us, all five of us emptied our weapons at redacted, a desperate attempt to stop redacted, who was at the front of our group, desperately tried to reload his weapon as redacted. With another redacted into his flesh, redacted, the rest of us could do nothing but watch in horror as redacted. We were utterly helpless against this thing, the redacted to the rest of us, and we all began to flee for our lives. Redacted very fast and quickly caught up with us. Redacted playing with us, trying to make us think that we had a chance of escaping. Redacted dragged him back. Redacted emptied his gun in redacted. Knowing he stood no chance against redacted, managed to arm a grenade and redacted. The explosion knocked the redacted back a few feet, but redacted. Smoking and bleeding from numerous wounds. Officer redacted, bloodied and broken body, lay on the ground. Redacted. His chest ripped open. Redacted sacrifice gave us enough time to arm our own grenades and redacted. We then made a break for it, sprinting towards the surface even as explosions rang out behind us and the tunnels began to collapse all around. We had barely surfaced when police and firefighters from nearby precincts arrived in force to secure the scene. They arrested 54 cultist members, including their leader, Michael Thomas, who was laughing as though he were completely insane. His fear that without Officer Redacted's selfless act, we would all be dead. His bravery will not be forgotten. In order to ensure that whatever was in the tunnels remained buried forever, Officer Redacted retrieved a box of dynamite from one of our cars and lit it before throwing it into the basement. The explosion brought down much of the chapel and consumed it in flames. We lost three highly respected officers in the operation, but because City Hall wants to bury this story as quickly and thoroughly as possible, it is unlikely that they will be recognized for their sacrifice. One would expect such news to be all over the front pages and on every radio broadcast, but it's strange how little attention the case has received, especially when we know that the main culprit behind it all, Pastor Michael Thomas, was only sentenced to 40 years in prison, and most of his fellow cultists were released from custody shortly thereafter. Since the event, I have suffered from chronic insomnia, haunted by otherworldly nightmares of evil lying dormant in our universe, waiting an opportunity, redacted, kind. I'm constantly troubled by the thought that somewhere right now another cult may be trying to redact it. Prey upon humanity. Done.
Wow, this officer redacted did a whole lot of shit.
And you see a little bit of a tear in the clerk's eyes. See, maybe new officer redacted.
Officer redacted.
You're not sure which redacted, but. Yeah.
So that was 1912, May of 1912, and the pastor was sentenced to 40 years. Well, he'll die in prison because he's probably in his 60s or 70s at the time.
Optional handout one, Mr. Kennedy.
Boston Police Department incident report. Date, April 7th, 1918, 8:30 p.m. The Chief Street in Copps Hill. Incident type, domestic disturbance. Brief details, including the date, time, and place at which the referred occurred. On April 7th, 1918, my partner and I were dispatched to a domestic disturbance in Sheaf Street. Once we arrived at the scene, we heard screams and noises coming from the house. We went directly to the house, knocked on the door, and announced that we were Boston police officers. Upon knocking on the door, the screams inside intensified. At that point, we decided to break down the door to deal with the situation as quickly as possible. As we entered the house, we found a long, dark hallway with two or three doors on either side. In the living room to our right, we noticed a woman sitting in shock. Suddenly, a man came running up the stairs from the basement, crying and screaming to the woman that a knife had flown through the air and attacked him. Suspecting the man was intoxicated, my partner and I called out and again identified ourselves as police officers. He became belligerent and attacked us with such intensity that we had to use our batons to subdue him and place him under arrest. As we struggled to handcuff him, he kept screaming about a devil in the house that tried to kill him. Observing the man's behavior, we concluded that the man was suffering from some form of hysteria and would need to see a doctor. After transporting the man to our vehicle, we went back to the house to check on the woman. When we returned, she was still sitting in the living room, apparently in shock, and talking about being attacked by a ghost. We then decided to bring her outside and into our car. Once we were both sitting safely inside, we drove them both to Roxbury Sanitarium for assessment by medical staff. reporting officers, Sergeant Luther Norris, the reporting, and Patrolman Philip Gunther. The end.
This seems to be the incident report when the Macario of the Macarios.
This.
Just like the flying knife is a new added touch.
Well, I'm disappointed that they didn't look further in the house. Maybe there was an intruder who threw a knife at him in the basement.
It's possible. Kate, optional handout number 3.
But how did he run up the stairs if they were so rickety?
Yeah, that's also, I know.
Well, perhaps he did very well in his dexterity check.
Better than Dottie, anyways.
Quite possible. Or perhaps the person who created these did not think about that when they put that police report together. But it's still a very well put together item.
Dottie here has the Office of the Chief Medical Examiner for the death of unidentified church member. Age unknown, male, white, notified by Officer Dexter Dyer, Boston PD. So the place where the injury occurred was at the Chapel of Contemplation on Copse Hill on scene, and the remarks state the injuries sustained by victims of the fire, which included burns and bruises as well as lacerations and internal organ damage, were consistent with burns caused by fire and building collapse as well as injuries from falling debris. I hereby certify blah, blah, blah on the 5th of May 1912. Cause of death was external trauma, and that was by Professor Richard Wilmarth, was the coroner.
Very good. And Goose, the last piece.
All right, Harold's got a wanted poster.
He sure does.
Offered by the state, $300 reward. The reward offered will be paid to the person or persons who caused the arrest, detention, and turn the prisoner over to the authorized officer of state or local police. Prisoner number 13072, Michael Thomas, alias Reverend Thomas, formerly Reverend of the Church of Contemplation and Church of Our Lord, of Gatherer of Secrets, escaped from the Boston Police Penitentiary May 12, 1917. Arrested May 2nd, 1912 on charges of abduction and murder, termed 40 years, age unknown, but approximately 60 to 70 years old, weight 220 pounds, height is 6 feet 2 inches, color white, occupation minister, cult leader American. Any information as to Thomas's whereabouts should be forwarded to the state police or Boston police. Caution is advised. And he has a epic mustache.
I shared the poster picture with them so they could see his epic facial hair.
So he escaped from prison.
He sure
it totally did. Looks evil. Just look at him.
Yeah.
Kind of looks like Hetfield.
He looks like a thinned Paul from Orange County Choppers.
Oh, the Chowderheads. Yes, right. I haven't thought about them in a long time.
He's about the same size as Dorian.
Indeed. And that is where we're going to stop for this session of Call of Cthulhu. With me tonight was Mark.
I'm thinking.
Kate.
Bye.
Goose.
Bye, everybody, and thanks for listening.
Graham.
Have a good one, y'all. We'll see you next time.
And Steve.
Everybody have a good night. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you for joining us. If you want to find us, visit linktree.com/COJ roleplaying to find our socials. Good night.